Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Mekhi Becton, ladies and gentlemen, human beings that large should not run as fast as Mekhi Becton did. And if you like people just abusing other humans, the Mekhi Becton tape is for you.
Wilson going to the air. Chased out by Daquan Jones. Wilson looking end zone wide open. Touchdown! First NFL touchdown for Zach Wilson. And it goes to Corey Davis. Crowder trying to get him out of space. Slips a tackle. And there he goes. Crowder. It's a foot race. And Crowder is in there. A 69-yard touchdown.
Hill hit immediately. He got the handoff.
You know that's
the Q-inator.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the PlayLikeAJet.com digital studio, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeJet1. And it's time for midweek news and notes. And so for that, we head down to the Jersey Shore with the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at JetsInsider.com. And above all that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. Chris, I'm glad you're down at the shore because it's starting to get chillier. I don't think there's going to be a lot more weekends in the near future where you're going to be able to enjoy that place. So enjoy it now while you can.
Oh, no. See, you got me all wrong. I love it down here during the cold and the winter. It is a very quiet, and, you know, I don't get to enjoy some of the perks of the beach as with the water, but I like it very much when it gets cold. So it's super quiet, and like this whole place, it's just like there's nobody around at all for miles. It feels great. I love every second of it down here.
I forgot for a second, and that's my fault, that you're an extremely strange human being in addition to being a very big deal. So while most people would prefer to be at the Jersey Shore when it's nice and you can go out on the water, I forgot that you are a bit of a hermit, so that's on me. I'm slapping myself in the face for that one. But I'm not going to slap myself in the face for the fact that I'm happy to see that Marcus May and Jarrad Davis look like they're both going to be back this week. It looks promising, Robert Saleh said. We're going to talk more about what he said to the press, but this is the big news. And hey, Marcus May's agent wasn't lying. He's back in time for the trade deadline, which is November 2nd. So there's still hope.
Yeah, I don't think that's what he meant by that exactly. I think it was more you would get back just in time to be traded and never have to play again. But yeah, technically it works and it's right. I don't know how that trade part's going to go through, but he's definitely right. Now we'll see. I'm a little skeptical on the accuracy of Robert Saleh's injury updates with us, and that might just be some leftover feelings from training camp. And that's what happens. Maybe they don't play this week. Maybe they do, but they're definitely coming right around the corner. Obviously Marcus May will help this defense a lot, especially with the way that the whole safety position has gone so far. Just these picking guys up the street, throwing them out there, picking somebody else up and throwing them out there. That's going to help. But I'm really excited to see Jarrad Davis, just the experiment of Jarrad Davis. I want to see somebody that was drafted highly, thought of highly coming out of college, went to Detroit, was just, you know, pretty much irrelevant and did nothing there. A lot of people pinning that blame squarely on Matt Patricia and not using him right. And Robert Saleh identifying something there and saying, no, this guy will be perfect. I want to see how that experiment unfolds. I want to see if, you know, okay, maybe he's just better than what he was in Detroit, but it's still nothing special. Maybe it's something completely exactly what Robert Saleh saw and expected. So I'm very excited to see how that experiment plays out.
There's also the issue of depth, because as you said, the Jets have been dragging guys off the street to play safety. They're not particularly deep at linebacker. So just having these two guys back and available would be big for the defense.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, especially at safety, you know, not as big of a concern at the linebacker, because especially with Quincy Williams coming in and starting to play a little bit better the last couple of weeks, and now he's got the bye week, he should feel comfortable with the defense, so it's not as big of a deal, but still, you know, they're light pretty much everywhere except for defensive end, the defensive line, so get some more depth in there, but certainly at the safety position. They need at least one solid, you know, veteran presence you can trust back there. So, that's going to be huge for them.
Sala also said that Elijah Moore is impacting the passing game. I don't know if he meant to say that he hopes he will impact the passing game, but as of now, I'm not really sure what he means by that, because did I miss something?
What he means by that is that he's drawing attention, which should, in theory, be opening things up for everybody else. Of course, you know, and that's one thing to say in theory. I'm a little hesitant to put anything towards that when the offense isn't, you know, actually doing much.
That's what I was going to say, Chris. It doesn't make sense to me because the offense isn't doing anything. So if Moore was drawing attention and it was leading to other guys making plays and the offense scoring, then I could see the argument, but I really don't get where he's going with that. I do hope that Elijah Moore does start to get more involved, and I do think that he and Mims will be more involved in the offense starting Sunday simply because they've run out of excuses and they've run out of other options. But at the same time, for him to say that Moore has been impactful so far, again, not on Moore. He's doing his job and getting open, but when the offense isn't doing anything, he hasn't really impacted the offense. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I completely agree with you, because that's the thing. If this offense is humming and he's got zero catches, like, you can still make that point. Like, you can be like, look, he's drawing attention away. That's opening everything else up. But he's not having an impact because nobody's having an impact on this, or at least not a positive impact on this offense right now. There's negative impacts. There's not a whole lot of positive impacts going on in this offense from any position, really.
Sala also said that Mike LaFleur and his staff did a great job of figuring out what the Jets offense does well. I'd love to know what that supposedly is and what they don't. Sala said that he himself has changed some things up, but it's subtle, says that you wouldn't even notice it. That's how subtle it is. He's very happy about the soundness of what the team is doing. So like I said, Chris, I don't know exactly what it is that the offense is supposedly doing well so far, but if they found bright spots, more power to them. That said, I'm glad that they're focusing on the weaknesses, and the number one weakness, of course, is not scoring points. Because that's one of the keys to a successful offense, is putting points on the board. And obviously, if you dig a little deeper into that, the biggest weakness beyond not scoring points and one of the biggest reasons for it not happening is the fact that Zach Wilson has struggled, particularly when it comes to those easier throws. If he can make those regularly, then it'll set the offense up in much better situations. There's a stat that I saw, and it was incredible. Graham Coffey, forget who he writes for, but he does stuff with Georgia Bulldogs content, but he's Dogs Out West on Twitter. He had a stat that the Georgia Bulldogs this season have only had to go to a third down 32% of the time, meaning that they picked up a first down on first or second down 68% of the time. That is an insane stat. Now, I know the Georgia Bulldogs are a really good team, but remember, they've had injuries at receiver. Their starting quarterback is out. So it says a lot about Todd Monken. So yes, I am using this as a way to pat Todd Monken on the back again, but I'm using it more as a way to explain the type of offense that you want the Jets to have. And one of the keys to providing that offensive output is to have Zach Wilson making those easy throws and having shorter second downs so that they don't end up in third and longs, because that's when offenses have a lot of problems. And because Wilson's been struggling with those shorter throws, it's put them in bad situations. You'd like to see that come to a halt starting this Sunday in Foxborough against the Patriots.
One thing about Scott, he's going to get that Todd Monken praise in there, no matter what. You're going to find a way to shoehorn in there. I like it. I respect it. You know, I'm on the Todd Monken band train. I've been on that for a while. So, yeah. Obviously, it is the idea of just thinking about, you know, we've looked at what we've done well. somebody saying that with the Jets offensively is of course funny. But you can still go back and look, and you can see things schematically and game plan wise that would have worked or were going right if just Corey Davis didn't have those drops, or Ty Johnson, Michael Carter didn't drop those passes, Zach Wilson could complete these short passes. So I'm gonna think that, assume that's where they're going with that. Just schematically, game plan wise, these are the things that it could have worked. It could have worked better if we're just properly executed. But yeah, there's obviously a lot of things that should have been pretty easy to self-identify, that things that were going wrong and things that they need to correct and maybe try to do a little bit differently, switch things up. You know, the solid talking about the subtle changes. I'm glad they're subtle, because I don't care. I know rookie head coach and you want to learn on the fly, but after just a handful of weeks, I don't care how bad it's going. There's only so much I want you, like, you know, dramatically changing. So subtle changes, little tweaks here and there, that's how it should be all the time. You should always, you know, living life, doing whatever. You should always be adding subtle tweaks to be more efficient and help in certain ways. But I know it hasn't gone well. It was not time to just panic and just try to come up with a completely new approach to things. So that's good. But again, it should be really easy to identify what hasn't worked and what they haven't been able to do well, and just shy away from that. You know, it's that self-scouting week. And yeah, there was plenty of that on tape to show, yeah, just this doesn't work. You guys can't do this right now.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Chris, I guess if you want to say one thing that has been a positive with the offense, it's that the tackles have been much better than expected in pass protection without Mekhi Becton. George Fant and Morgan Moses have actually held it down pretty well. There is some news about Mekhi Becton, though. Robert Saleh said Becton is a few weeks away, said that Becton is in pretty good shape. So it looks like he's right on that timeline that we expected. He'll probably be back in a couple of weeks, sometime in November. But in the meantime, again, if we want to focus on something positive, while Fant hasn't exactly been a juggernaut in the run game, both he and Moses have done a solid job holding down the fort at tackle. I assume that when Becton comes back, Fant goes to the bench, but it is nice that the Jets actually have a little bit of depth there on that O-line at the tackle spot.
Yeah, definitely. And just overall, the offensive line as a whole has gotten better as the season's gone on. While I'm not watching Zach Wilson and the mistakes he's making and going, that's because he was rushed, because the offensive line has let him down so much. Like, you know, during Darnold's, especially his first couple of years, it was really hard to criticize him and pick apart certain things, because as he got the ball, he was already trying to run away from pass rushers. And we saw that certainly in the first half of week one against the Panthers with Zach Wilson. It hasn't been that the last couple of weeks. And honestly, that I'm forever grateful for that, because it makes it a lot easier to try to evaluate the quarterback that way. But I really want to sit down and just take a moment out and give George Fant his flowers real quick, because I know he's not playing great, but considering that he sat there and he's been taking all his reps at right tackle, right tackle, right tackle, and then in season, he has to switch to the left-hand side and basically do everything backwards. It's a minor miracle that he's not just a complete and outright disaster. To have to make that switch in season is incredibly difficult. And you obviously would like a better performance out of your left tackle, but considering how hard of a task that is, it's impressive. Mekhi Becton, he can't get back fast enough. You would rather have him out there. But, yeah, that's a really tough thing to do, to switch from right side to left side. And the fact that he just hasn't been a disaster is impressive to me.
Chris, I want to talk about two former Jets that are actually helping the team still, even though they're not here. One of them, Geno Smith. The other, Jamal Adams. As you know, Geno Smith starting right now for the Seattle Seahawks in place of an injured Russell Wilson. And Jamal Adams just got paid big money in the offseason by the Seahawks, and he's their star safety. He hasn't exactly had the best season so far this year. And on Sunday Night Football, that continued because even though, and I understand this was a tribute to somebody, so I get that, but he's been saying it forever. In the pregame, Jamal Adams in the introduction said that he's the best in the nation. I get that it was a tribute to somebody, but he's been making comments like that his entire career, so take that for what it's worth. During the game, he had an interception bounce right off of his chest. If he'd have caught it, who knows, because remember, the Steelers ended up winning a tight game in overtime, and so that might have been the turning point. Geno Smith, it was the typical Geno Smith performance. Some really nice throws and some back-breaking mistakes. The Seahawks go on to lose to the Steelers, and so you may be asking yourself, why am I talking about the Seahawks? Why am I talking about Jamal Adams and Geno Smith? Well, the reason is because the Jets have the Seattle Seahawks first-round pick as a result of trading Jamal Adams to the Seahawks last year. We know that they already used Seattle's first-round pick in 2021, and they used the third-rounder as well to grab Elijah Vera Tucker because they used that third-rounder as part of a trade-up to go up and get him from 23 to 14. Now they've got Seattle's 2022 first-rounder as well, and so every Seattle loss helps the Jets. And according to Tankathon right now, Chris, the Jets would have the number 6 pick that would be their own and the number 10 pick, Seattle's, if the season were to end today. So the Jets would have two top 10 picks. Thank you, Jamal Adams. Thank you, Geno Smith. And I know that Travis Milton had said on There's Always Next Year yesterday, he was looking at Kenyon Green and Tyler Linderbaum as the two picks if the Jets ended up with those two top 10 picks. Sounds good to me. We were just talking about how the offensive line has been better than expected. But Chris, think about it. If Russell Wilson is out long enough for the Seahawks to keep piling up losses and they end up with a top 10 pick and the Jets continue down this trajectory, and even if they play a little bit better, they still end up with a top 10 pick of their own and they're able to get somebody like Green and somebody like Linderbaum with those two picks, I mean, you want to talk about completely remaking that offensive line. If you would then have Becton and Vera Tucker on the left side and then you have Linderbaum and Green to add in there, all of a sudden, you've got the makings of a potentially elite offensive line. So it is kind of funny how Jamal Adams continues to be the gift that keeps on giving for the Jets.
Yeah, well, hey, I'll add a third name into that mix, because ever since Christian McCaffrey got hurt and Sam cannot rely on the 10 targets for 130 receiving yards from McCaffrey, that train has fallen way off the track, and he has spiraled into classic Sam Darnold. That's not a first-round pick they got coming their way, but that could be better picks as well. Yeah, the Jamal stuff, you know, I haven't been on Twitter much, especially during the bye week, but as I'm watching that Seahawks game, I'm sitting the Seahawks Steelers, I was like, yep, let me go see what Jets Twitter is saying about Jamal here. And yeah, there was some good comedy in there as well, especially with that interception just like bouncing right off his face, basically. And yeah, I mean, you know, that Jamal is going to Jamal. He's going to run his mouth, but that is not looking good there. And it's not just because Russell Wilson is hurt, because Jamal has been playing, he's just awful in coverage, and he hasn't been racking up those sacks this year either. But yeah, if that's what it's going to come down to, is how much time is Russ going to miss? And then even, are the Seahawks going to be at a point where he is ready to come back? And, you know, let's just say he's ready to come back and there's 5 games left. Are they going to rush them out there if they're already out of playoff contention? You know, obviously they don't have to concern themselves about where they're drafting with that first round pick, but still, are they going to rush them back just to play meaningless games? If they have to go the whole season, you know, Geno hasn't been terrible, and that giving up that fumble at the end was understandable considering how T.J. Watt just came out of nowhere, just shot out. He didn't see that, but yeah, if if he's going their quarterback the rest of the season, you're going to end up having a much higher draft pick than if Russell Wilson was there. So, you got that to lean on. And, you know, at least if you want to sit here and still root for the Jets to win and not start immediately turning to looking at Jets position draft position every week, you can keep your eye on that Seahawks draft position and even that Panthers draft position and watch those go up, creep up and up and up, and be happy with that at least.
Yeah, that's true, because, Chris, I had completely forgotten to mention the Carolina situation. As of right now, if the season were to end, the Jets would have Carolina's second-round pick, which would be number 48. So the Jets would not only have two top 10 picks, they would have four picks in the top 50. So if Joe Douglas can't use those to completely remake the roster in his image combined with what he's done the last 2 years, then quite frankly, he's not the guy for the job. Now, obviously, this could all change, because if Carolina starts winning again, Seattle starts winning again, or the Jets make a surge, then those picks drop. But for now, it's interesting that the Jets might have the opportunity to pick four times in the top 50. I will say this, though. I'm getting very tired of tracking things like this, and I'm hoping that this is one of the last years that I have to do it for a while. Chris Nimbley, the very big deal, the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at JetsInsider.com. Thanks so much for coming on, as always, and talking through the midweek news with me. Really appreciate it. I know you've got a lot going on at JetsInsider.com right now, so everybody should check out your work and also follow you on Twitter at JetsInsider and at CNimbley. Check out what we're doing at PlayLikeAJet.com and the Play Like a Jet YouTube channel. Luke Grant has got a video up breaking down Zach Wilson's performance against Atlanta and why maybe it wasn't quite as bad as people are making it out to be. Also, a video about how Elijah Vera Tucker dominated against the Atlanta Falcons, including really pushing around Grady Jarrett, which is pretty surprising. I don't think anybody would have expected that to happen. So if you haven't watched those videos and you haven't subscribed to our channel yet, go ahead and do that. We've also got shirts up at the Play Like a Jet store at teepublic.com. That's teepublic.com. We've got a brand new shirt that is Quinnen Williams and John Franklin Myers up in honor of that John Franklin Myers contract extension that happened before the bye week. Bless you. Thank you. We've also got the Zach Says Go Long shirt with him pointing downfield towards Corey Davis. Tremendous artwork done by Alex, who is Luke Grant's significant other. She can be found on Instagram at _canibefrank, but just fantastic artwork. It's on the shirt. You can check them out right now at teepublic, teepublic.com. And give us a 5-star review for the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done that already. Easy way to help out the show if you like what we're doing. Doesn't take much time, doesn't cost you any money, but it goes a long way to help us out. So if you could go ahead and do that for us, we'd be quite grateful. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts and content, you know where to go. That's Play Like a Jet Digital and PlayLikeAJet.com.